The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is
Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short.
Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. This is a new era of Red Sox baseball. Through every twist and turn, every major development, we are all on this journey together. This is going to be the most honest Sox podcast you're going to hear. No BS, just the truth. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Broward County, Florida, is Nick Diamond. Nick, how are you?
Not too good. Awful last 2 days. Brutal losses. Two avoidable losses. The bullpen broke down. Heading back home. Only one game over 500 when we really should be like 4 or 5. Just the disappointing end to the road trip here.
I agree. Yeah, not the way we wanted to go. Also with us on the show is Chris Felico from Warwick, New York. Chris, how you doing?
Not great. I'm pretty disgusted, to be honest. I think, you know, Jeremy said it best a couple episodes ago. You can't win a division at this point in the season, but you can lose one. And I hate to say it, but we're starting to see some trends here that I've seen the last couple of seasons. They're starting to add up to making me think this is not going to be as easy as we had all hoped going into this season. So talk about a new era, but maybe it's just a new year at this point.
I think that's pretty valid. Yeah, because I tweeted out earlier, like you look at the Red Sox record right now compared to where they were at the end of April last year, they had a better record last year. Yep. And they probably had a tougher schedule because if anyone's looked it up, your month of April schedule for the Red Sox had the lowest rating in terms of percentage, in terms of like competitiveness. You had a very weak April schedule. I mean, you played the White Sox twice. Like you had a lot of bums in that schedule and you're barely over 500 now. And you're losing to division opponents like Toronto, which yeah, Toronto's not bad. They re-signed Vladdy, but I don't know. Is that a team we should be scared of? Like, so Nick, like when you look at how they did in April, given what they have ahead of them in the schedule, do you feel good about this team? Or are you starting to think like, I don't know, maybe those 90-plus win projections are a little bit too much?
I honestly don't feel too good about it going forward. You know, yesterday, Lucas Giolito came back, and it looked like we finally were going to get a fully healthy rotation. And then today we get some more bad news in the rotation. So it just – I don't know if this depth that we all – described was a good thing coming into the season is going to hold up. It already is depleted with Richard Fitz down, a bunch of other guys down. You know, I was impressed with Hauk today. You know, he really stepped up and, you know, I kind of was thinking he might get himself forced out of the rotation, but today he kind of stepped up on 7 innings, you know? So that is some positive that we could take away, but just, I'm not looking forward to going to face some good teams. We know we lost to the White Sox. We got away with it staying around 500 with the Yankees not pulling away. No other teams pulling away, but you're not going to get away with this against really good teams, against really good pitching. I know the Red Sox don't hit high velocity very well. As soon as we start seeing good fastballs, we start running into the Tigers, we start running into the Yankees soon, we're going to lose, and we're going to lose badly because we can't hit this high velocity pitching. So I'm just not looking forward to the next coming weeks here. April and March was a pretty easy schedule. I know the Rangers were kind of tough early on, but they really haven't played well recently. So there haven't been a lot of tough opponents, and there's going to come a couple coming up soon. So, no.
And Chris, I don't know how you felt about the team preseason, but were you optimistic and now are you feeling differently, or were you kind of always on this path of like, this is who they are, you know, I'm not surprised?
So I was cautiously optimistic. I think until they signed Bregman, I was very much like, I just don't think this is going to be enough. I actually also, I wish I mentioned in the war room early on, I wasn't a proponent of thinking that the quote-unquote depth was such a good thing. I thought that not from a depth perspective, I thought that it could screw up building consistency, especially for a team that lacks consistency over the past five or six seasons, with the exception of 2021. I think the most frustrating part for me of this season so far is like we brought in these pieces that we thought were going to bring us over the top and make us a real contender, or at least consistent, right, to be able to challenge the Yankees for this division and especially in a weak American League. And the frustrating part is that it's actually done its job. Like Chapman has been better than I think we all expected. Bregman's been tearing, you know, the cover off the ball. Crochet is, as advertised, possibly better as long as we don't throw his arm out at this point. And, I mean, I look at even Lucas Giolito at this point is like an addition because he hasn't pitched. Granted, it's a small sample size, but I think all of us can be happy with the performance that he gave us. It's the people that we were counting on that have been on this team that we thought we were going to deliver that have not shown up. Right, whether we're talking about Tristan Casas, I mean, we're all not Tristan Casas fans, but the fans as a whole expect a lot out of him. Trevor Story, we're like, oh, if he could just stay healthy. Well, now he is staying healthy, and we're starting to see some other ugly trends despite him being healthy. Rafael Devers got up to a slow start. So, I mean, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The manager, which we'll get into. But the point is that all these additions we had have been as advertised or better, and yet we are worse. And that's a concern.
I agree with you. Yeah, I think that it's not just the additions. The additions have actually been good. I mean, like you said, Bregman's been off to a red hot start. And, you know, most of your pitching additions have been pretty good so far. Obviously, we'll get into some of those actually in another show. We're going to do a whole pitching breakdown of what's going on with the pitching staff, injury-wise, expectation-wise, whatever. We'll save that for another show, not this one, but yeah, that's to be expected too. And I'm glad you brought up Tristan Casas because, unfortunately, guys, we have to do a bottom five once again. And it's with the midweek, it's getting tiring doing a bottom five because I feel like we did a ton of these last year, but we're back at it again. Red Sox lose the series. They lose the series to the Toronto Blue Jays, who I'm sorry, like, I don't consider a real threat. I don't think that they're a big threat to you, that you should be better than this team, but you lost two out of three. You blew two awful games. So we are going to do a bottom five list. And coming in at number five is Tristan Casas himself. And was he your biggest problem this series? No, of course not. You know, you had much bigger problems left and right. But once again, it's Tristan Casas who everyone keeps telling me, just be patient. Just be patient. He's going to get there. He's going to get there. He hates the month of April. He'll start hitting, and all of a sudden, everything's going to turn around, and he's going to turn into, you know, this monster. And he didn't do anything this series. He had a couple of hits in game one, but otherwise, the strikeouts are still there. I still think he's defensively a clunk at first base, frankly. I still look at him, I'm like, you're not a good athlete. I'm struggling to find why there's this sacred cow view of Tristan Casas. Like, we're not allowed to criticize Tristan Casas because the second half of 2023 he was such a monster, right? Like, he was good, but can we stop pretending like he was an MVP the second half of that year? He was good. He was better than the first half because the first half was garbage. Like, it's not hard to be better than that. And then he's had injuries throughout 2024, and this year it's like, so do we just have to accept the fact that Tristan Casas is going to suck every April? But, oh no, don't worry. He'll get there, and he'll be there when it matters. Really? Will he? Or is he going to be injured again? Or is he going to have another month where, you know, he's just not really feeling it? I'm not feeling the mental swings. I don't know. My mind's just not there yet. Like, I'm getting frustrated with this guy, and I'm glad that the calendar has turned to May, because now I want to see all the Casas defenders. If by Mother's Day, this guy still isn't hitting, are you still going to defend him? Or is it going to turn into, oh, no. He's good once Memorial Day hits. And they just keep moving the goalposts, pushing that deadline. Like, it's getting ridiculous. This guy has such sacred cow treatment from this fan base. And I really don't understand why. I really don't. Other than the fact that, yeah, he was a first-round pick. And maybe you're a bit protective of him because of that. But, like, is that it? It, like, do you guys really like the personality, you know, the doing the yoga in the outfield when he's in a middle, like a two for 23 streak? Like, I just don't get it. So I'll never get the Tristan Casas thing until he turns into an absolute stud. But once again, a series where admittedly your offense wasn't the biggest problem, but he was a no-show. Once again, he's a no-show. And, you know, unfortunately they tell you you're not allowed to talk about it, but this is why we're here. We're going to talk about it, whether you like it or not. So, Nick, I'll start with you. Your thoughts on Tristan Casas so far. Are you fed up like I am, or are you trying to be more patient?
No, I'm sick of him. I'm sick of him batting 180. I'm sick of him being the slowest guy in the league. I'm sick of his bad defense at first base. And we probably have a better option sitting in AAA. And I'm not talking about Roman Anthony. I'm talking about Vaughn Grissom. You might as well bring him up, see what he can do. You traded Chris Sale for him. You traded the Cy Young. You might as well see what Vaughn Grissom can do. What's the point of him playing in AAA for us in a position that he's not going to play for another team? Are you going to trade him as a first baseman? No, you trade him as a shortstop or a second baseman or a third baseman. So if Vaughn Grissom's going to help you, that's great. You might as well use him for something. So if, like you said, Mother's Day is probably the longest leash you can give him at this point, because this team needs a spark. It needs something. And if Vaughn Grissom can come up, and I haven't looked too much into him, but just hit singles, you know, get on base somewhat, not have a 200 on base percentage like Tristan Casas is like supporting right now. Like, it's not great. Also, like you said, I don't know why they love him so much. It's like, he was the first prospect that came up for this new era. And it's just like, they can't accept he's a bust. He's a platoon hitter, and he's just not that good. I mean, they think he's going to hit 40 homers. He realistically can never hit 40 homers. Not many people have ever hit 40 homers. So I Topsy hits 30, and I don't even see that happening at this point in his career, how he's looked, how it's going. So it's just, you know, I'm sick of Tristan Casas. If he doesn't pick it up in the next day or two, you might as well look to move on. At least Vaughn Grissom.
Chris, what do you feel about Tristan Casas?
So many things. I'll start with the fact that, I mean, listen, Tristan Casas is Bobby Dolbeck with a little bit better eyesight and a hot streak of 4 months. That's all he is at this point. Because the truth is, like, everything that Nick said is true, everything that you said is true, but he's really a microcosm of the Red Sox. Right, we keep saying they're gonna get out of it. They're gonna be better, just like we think the same thing with Tristan, but they're not at this point. And we keep waiting, and they make mistakes. They look clunky. They're slow when they need to be fast. And it's like, it just speaks to Tristan Casas. And you know, I think I've been in denial with Tristan Casas. Not that I ever thought he was going to be good, but there was the hope and the dream at some point that, like, we're gonna get rid of this guy or like send him to the moon. And we might have Vladdy. But then that dream quickly dissipated when he signed that contract. And even then, I kind of still was in denial. And then we had the series, which was fitting. So, of course, it's against Toronto. And of course, Vladdy showed up and he's the hero. And there we have Tristan Casas. So I love Nick's idea at this point. Like, Von Grissom, we gave up Chris Sale, which of course turned back into old Chris Sale as soon as he left the Red Sox. And looks like a Cy Young candidate. And of course, we thought we were getting a good prospect. And then he's an absolute shell of himself, a mess compared to where he was in Atlanta, which is super fitting. But at this point, he can't be worse than Tristan Casas. Because I'm sick of waiting for Tristan Casas to become what we all thought he's going to be. He's not. He's never going to be the hitter that people think he's going to be at this point. We're lucky if he's AAA with the way that he's played. So send him wherever at this point. Send the AA. I don't really care, but just let's find something.
I'm with you guys. Like, I'm willing to give Von Grissom that chance because, first of all, Von Grissom's younger than Tristan Casas, so there might be a little more upside. He also had half a really good season with Atlanta. I would say his half season was better than Casas's, like, if we're comparing it. So, and he's a right-handed hitter. He's a big kid. He's got a little bit of pop. Like, why not, you know? I know that the knock on him is that as a shortstop or a second baseman, he's not a great athlete. Fine. Maybe he's a better athlete at first base. I'm willing to give him that chance because in Tristan Casas, you're looking at a guy who you haven't extended him yet. This isn't a Rafaela situation where you gave him the big 8-year contract. Like, he hasn't negotiated with you. He hasn't signed in with you yet. So they're still at an impasse there. So I think the Red Sox hold all the cards here. They could just go, dude, you haven't hit in like ages. Like, we're going to try something else because, you know, news break, but we're trying to make the playoffs this year, or at least that's what they say. So yeah, I'm willing to try any and all options. Like, and if Von Grissom's the guy, if he keeps tearing it up, go for it. I'm okay with that because at this point, yeah, he was a former first round pick. A lot of people don't want to give up on Casas, but if this is who he is, it's not a long-term fit. So we'll see how it goes, but he definitely, for a guy in his position, again, doesn't have the extension in hand. He's got to pick it up for himself and the team, both, you know, likewise. So with that, we'll move to the real issues with this series. So we will go to number 4 on our bottom 5. Nick, who do we got?
We got Garrett Whitlock, and it's just one day. Going back to game 2 of the series, Garrett Whitlock comes in right after Giolito gives up 2 runs. The umpire kind of screwed Giolito on a walk, and then he kind of gave a back-to-back homers to the Blue Jays, and then he was quickly pulled, or he got out of it, and then we went to Whitlock. Whitlock got crushed. His stuff looked down. He gave up 4 hits, 3 runs, a game-tying bomb. He just looked awful, at least in that first inning. He came back in the second inning, and he shut him down, but he didn't look great. His stuff looked down. And then a couple shows ago, I was praising how good he looked. You know, his fastball was up. His sweeper was looking like it was breaking a little bit more. I just think his stuff looked down. He kind of looked tired. I don't know, but he hadn't pitched much, so I don't know why he would look tired. So I don't know if that's an injury concern or anything. I just think his stuff was down. But Cora let him go out there for 2, so obviously everything was okay. But we'll see how he looks the next outing. So that'll probably be tomorrow. You know, they shut him down for 2, so we'll see.
Chris, what do you think about Whitlock?
Yeah, I mean, agree with everything that Nick said. I think it's an astute observation by Nick, the fact that, like, he did look very similar to he has in the past when he's either been overworked and overpitched or when he's coming back from injury. So that's one of the first things that went through my mind is like, oh, gosh, does this guy have some sort of nagging injury? Because I've seen this story before. I've seen him come back from injury and not look so great. I've seen when we also overworked him and his arm's about to fall off and he's doing this. And in this particular case, he hasn't pitched. So it's not in the matter of being overworked and there's no injury that they've announced to this point. So I don't think it's that. So I'm hoping it's just a blip on the radar. That's also been some things that have happened the last couple of years, especially with us switching him between bullpen starter, and us not making a firm decision, which has probably screwed up this kid. So, yeah, I hope it's just a blip on the radar. Bad time for it to happen if it is. But nonetheless, for the duration of this season and the hopes for this season, I hope that's all it is.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think it's just a blip on the radar. I've always said Whitlock is better in the bullpen. I think early results have shown that. But I do worry about the injury history. Like, this is a guy who, you know, I kept making the joke, and it was a bit facetious. Like, in spring training, he could step off the bus and get hurt. Like, he is kind of fragile. This is why the Yankees gave him up in the Rule 5 to begin with, right? He wouldn't cut it as a starter. They, you know, the Yankees don't have much foresight, so they let him go. You kind of toyed around with him. You tried to make him a starter way too much. You took a lot of mileage off that arm trying to do that. Not just off the arm, but off the whole body. So I do have concerns about that. Like, did you burn him out a little bit too much? Like, yeah, he's back to being a reliever, but then you got Alex Cora saying, well, if he pitches, it's going to be two innings, not just one. Well, what the hell is that about? Like, he's just kind of working his way back. Does he have to do two innings every time, or can you just have him out there? And Alex Cora has been inconsistent about that, as he has been with a lot of things. So you wonder if, like, it's early season burnout, or it's just early season, he's pitched more innings than he expected, and the fatigue is catching up with him. He's not recovering the same. Again, this is a guy who's missed, like, multiple months, years with injuries. So I think it's just a blip on the radar, but I am concerned about the usage. Like, it doesn't seem consistent. There are times where he pitches two and a thirds, and then there are times where he comes in for one inning, and that's it. Like, you've got to be really careful with a guy like this. Like, you've got to treat him like fine china. And I hate to say that, but that's kind of how it is with Whitlock. Like, with his injury history, you can't stretch it too much, and you can't be too creative with it. So I think it's just a blip on the radar, but I am concerned with, are they all aligned with the plan there? Like, is it all, you know, are they all agreed that this is what we're going to do? Or does the organization have a different idea and the pitcher is feeling something different? Like, that's what you worry about. So hopefully just a weird blip and Whitlock is back on track. I still think he's one of your better bullpen arms. I still think he should be your closer at some point, but, you know, weird blip, but hopefully he gets over it.
Well, so, Jason, you know what? I think to your point, though, I bet you there's the majority of the organization is probably aligned that he should be pitching one inning, right?
Yeah.
The reality is we're not in a position right now where he can, because middle relief has been terrible and very inconsistent, which has forced our hand to probably pitch him more than we want to, which is another underlying issue. Also some mismanagement from our manager. So yeah, I mean, that's another concern too, is that, like, we probably don't want to do this, but we kind of have to, because not many people stepping up right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And that's the thing, like, you have pitching depth, but you know, Cooper Criswell is really your only swing guy. I mean, you could turn Sean Newcomb into that, but it doesn't feel great. And even still, those are guys that you want pitching 3-4 innings, like mop-up duty kind of thing. You don't have a 2-inning, like, stretched out but not a starter kind of reliever. Whitlock fits that profile, but are we, like you said, are we all on board with that or not? Like, and I think you're right. I think the organization feels differently. I think that they kind of view him more as just, no, we want him to be the closer one day, and we're not saying that because we paid Chapman this stupid amount of money, you know, because we needed some, you know, some flex in the offseason. But I don't know. Like, it's one of those, like, who's talking to who and who's agreeing with who? Is the organization on the same board with Alex Cora, or is he feeling differently? And that's kind of been a problem really through the first month. Like, that's been rearing its head a little bit too much. So yeah, it's a great point. And speaking of the manager, so Nick, this is your guy, number three. Like, who's number three in the bottom five?
It's Alex Cora. You know, there's a few things I want to point out. I'll start with, in game one of the series, I think I said in the war room after the sixth inning, I think he was at 85 pitches. Garrett Crochet, I'm talking about. He was at 85 pitches. And I said, after what they did to him last outing and stretched him out to his career high again, it would be great to get him out here at six innings with a big lead and, you know, let him go and relax. They stretched him out to seven. I think he actually ended up at 94. So it wasn't like they overworked him or anything, but that was something I kind of criticized Cora about a little bit. You know, Garrett Crochet leads the major leagues in innings. You know, that's something that he's never been close to before in his entire career. So that's something you could be a little bit worried about, but it's also something you could be encouraged about because maybe he is hitting that next level, but also there are some red flags about hitting that. I think it's almost 50 innings already or something like that. So it's a big inning total just to be at May 1st. A few other things I want to point out with him, with Cora, I mean, is I'm sick of Hamilton in the lineup. I know Campbell was scratched today, but Hamilton was in the original lineup anyways. And another point we've brought up in the past is Campbell was scheduled to play center field tonight and Durant was supposed to play left field. So that's something I would be screaming about here. Again, another stupid decision. I don't like what Cora's doing right now. But the biggest thing I want to talk about, actually, we'll go back to game two again here. Another quick thing I'm not super upset about, but I want to bring it up is if it was up to me, I would have put Slayton in the ninth to face the clean inning, the 6-6 game, Slayton in the ninth and save Chapman for the 10th. Usually you go with your closer tied in the ninth at home and you save your closer away. I think I would have traditionally done that today or in that game. Especially because now you start with a runner on second base and you want your highest strikeout pitcher out there or your least hard contact guy out there. So Chapman would have been the best option, in my opinion, in extra innings. But I know you don't want to play for extras, but when you're on the road, you already do. You are playing for extras no matter what on the road. So the biggest thing is I wanted to point out was today when Vlad Jr. hit that home run, I think a lot of people said, walk him, walk him, walk him. It was a 2-1 game in the eighth inning here with Slayton on the mound. And they had runners on second and third with one out. And they decided not to put Vlad Jr. on first base to face Santander, who was basically arguing with the umpire while the pitches were thrown in his previous at-bat. There's no reason not to go to pitch to Santander. He could easily roll over to a double play and we're on to a win, or we're at least going to extra innings and having a chance. But it's just, it's impossible here that you don't why would you ever pitch to Vlad? You know who Vlad is. This is a guy the Red Sox have always wanted. You know he's always killed you. You don't pitch to Vlad Jr. when Santander is batting 179 and he's on deck and he's looked terrible besides yesterday. But today he looked weird. He looked terrible. He was arguing with the umpire. He hit a ground ball to second base and never got out of the box because he was still talking to the umpire. I think you could have gotten to his head. I think you could have pitched to him. I think it was the wrong move, and I think it really cost the Red Sox today.
Chris, how do you feel about the manager?
I have not been a big fan of the manager for a long time, and it stems beyond this season, but this season has like gotten me to my boiling point. I agree with everything that Nick said. It's great points. There's some other things that I would mention, but it would take away from some of the other things that we have to cover here. So for the sake of that, I'll hold on to it. But I think another thing with Cora, like I think about just even the Casas move, right? Like I recognize he's not going to be the only decision maker in sending him down to AAA and then bringing up Vaughn Grissom. However, he could send some messages to Casas, right? And throwing him as far down the freaking lineup to bat. Like I have him bat night, send a message until we either ship him out or he like cleans it up. Because at this point, you're not doing anything to give him a clear indicator that he's on the hot seat. And maybe that's just me being foolish and thinking the organization would actually ever have him on the hot seat. But I think it starts with the manager, right? Like that's what he gets paid to do and set that tone, set the culture in the clubhouse. But the inconsistencies in the lineup card, the moves that just don't make any sense, the way he manages the bullpen in Crochet drives me absolutely nuts. Like he's going to end up having this guy throw his arm out. It's the one highlight of our rotation right now that you can certainly count on. I'm not happy with Alex Cora. I think, you know, a lot of people give him credit for 2018, but the reality is any one of us that are on this podcast could have managed that team to a World Series. That's the reality.
Yeah. So I'm generally a pro Cora guy. I have been, you know, since I've been on this podcast, and I'll admit like this is the first year where I'm really starting to think like, what are you doing? And, you know, you mentioned the crochet usage. We'll get into that in our bonus show. There's a lot of pitching questions we have about not just the rotation itself, not just the bullpen, but the usage and Andrew Bailey and all that. We have a whole nother show about that. So if you're wondering about that, stay tuned. We'll get to it. But in terms of core of this series, yeah, like, why is David Hamilton still getting starts? Like, have we realized what he is? And I feel like I complained about this last week. And it's just, until he keeps, you know, if he keeps getting starts like this, like, it's going to be a constant complaint. He's a pinch runner. He's a 4A pinch runner. Yes, he had a good stretch last year where he hit the ball pretty well and he was getting on base and he helped you. But that's not who he is. He's just not a very good player. Again, the Brewers threw him in as part of the deal to acquire Jackie Bradley Jr., who's a worse hitter than David Hamilton is. So that should tell you all you need to know about who this guy is. Like, he's a 28-year-old journeyman. Like, yes, he's got speed, and I think that's why Cora loves him, because he can plug him in, he can steal a base, fine. But he's very limited. You can only put him at one position, because we've seen him try and play shortstop. It's not good. He's not a good hitter. It just, and Cora has this thing about, and he did this, he's been doing this ever since he got here. Like, April and May, he benches guys for rest. Because his whole thing is, well, it's a long season, you know, I want to make sure these guys are healthy. Like, I'm sorry, if your guys can't handle the strain of playing 140 to 150 games, you have a bad roster. And look, maybe that's what Cora knew during the Bloom era. I don't know. But, like, why are you benching? Again, like, the inconsistency with Casas and Abreu. Oh, they'll play against lefties. They barely have. Every time a lefty's up, he benches those two guys. It's just, like, so he does that. The bullpen usage is questionable. He still doesn't know who he really trusts in the ninth inning. And I'm not surprised, because I think the organization told him it's Chapman. And he's sitting there going, no, it isn't. I don't trust that guy. I've seen him blown saves, you know, left and right. I don't want to do that. So I think it's more just, he's not on the same page as the front office. And that's a huge problem. It's not a huge problem in terms of, like, are the Red Sox going to suck because of it? No. Like, they're not going to drop out of the race. They're not going to be a last place team. But going forward, like, is it going to cost you a few wins? I think so. Because I think Cora just, I think he more feels the game. And the front office is like, no, this is what we calculated. This is what we want. And there's a clash there. There's always going to be a clash there. So I just feel like the lineup cards, benching certain guys, you know, putting David Hamilton in there when you don't have to. And we didn't know that Campbell was going to be scratched. But, like, and maybe Cora knew it ahead of time. But even still, like, there's no reason to do that. Putting Campbell in center field, as you mentioned. Like, why? Like, you want this guy to be your future second baseman. Stop sticking him in the outfield where he's clearly not comfortable. Sorry, he's not. Like, all the Campbell defenders out there saying, oh, no, he's such a great athlete, he can do it. It doesn't matter. Don't make him go out there. It's not what he's used to. So it's like putting Jaron Duran back at second base. Yeah, Jaron Duran played second base at one point. You want to start playing there full time? Like, no, nobody wants to do that. So I just feel like Cora is kind of, in a way, doing his usual thing of, like, kind of sticking it to the front office a little bit. Like, I'm the manager, I make the lineup card. We've heard that comment from him before. And I feel like he's just kind of looking like, yeah, you stuck me with David Hamilton. Vaughn Grissom's, like, hitting almost 400 in AAA. You want to get me an upgrade? Or do you want me to put David Hamilton back out there to go over 4? Like, I feel like that's why Alex Cora does it. And I get it, but you got to win games. And if you want to keep having a pissing match with the front office, fine. But at some point, like, put the best lineup out there and have the pissing match behind closed doors. So, I don't know. Cora's been frustrating me. Again, we'll get into it a lot more in our second show with the the pitching, because there's a lot of questionable decisions going on there. But absolutely, lineup-wise, he's been all over the place. And he deserves to be called out a little bit, because 17 and 16, you should be better. Like, with that kind of schedule, you should be better right now. So he's absolutely on the list. Probably not the last time he'll be on the list, but there it is. So with that, we'll move to some members of the offense. So, Chris, number two on our bottom five, what do we got?
So we had Trevor Story. I mean, he's been, honestly, he's probably a bigger problem going past this series, if we're all being honest with ourselves. But, I mean, he only had two hits in this series, a million at bats. He only had two strikeouts. However, strikeouts, of course, I think in both cases came with runners in scoring position. In fact, he left four stranded in the series, which, if anyone watched it, we know how costly that proved to be, especially in game two, as well as tonight. But also, I think going into this game, he was two for his last 38. He's been ice cold. Again, tons of strikeouts during that time period, leaving a ton of runners in scoring position stranded, and just, he's not even having good at bats in a lot of cases. Like, I think going into the series, I was watching, and I kept thinking to myself in the last series was like, I wonder how many at bats he has where he literally only sees three or four pitches. That's how I feel watching him for like the last month. And it stinks, because he actually got hot for a little bit, to the point where it's like, oh, wow, maybe he's going to break out of this. And it was only for maybe 6 days. And then he went right back and just nosedived. And now he's worse than ever. And I mean, I think it's going to start to beg the question, because, again, you know, we talk about this depth we have throughout the organization. We have depth at shortstop. We have options. I don't know when we're going to pull that trigger. But I also, like, we just talked about a manager who I think has also been the biggest victim of this depth. Like, David Hamilton and putting him in the lineup is actually being a victim of having this overall depth. Last year, we cried about it when we had no options. Now we have an abundance of options and we use the wrong ones. So that's what I'm thinking with Trevor Story. Interested to hear what you think, Nick.
You know, I don't like Trevor Story ever since we've had him here, but he's always going to be a streaky guy. He's always going to be he's going to get super hot and then he's going to get super cold. I just hope the power can stay consistently. As long as he can hit like 15 to 20 homers, if he bats 220, whatever, if he can stay healthy, it can, I mean, Marcelo Meyer will be up eventually. I don't think it will be until at least like July. I think Roman Anthony comes up first, and then we'll see Marcelo Meyer later. But I think, like you said, the 2 for 38, whatever it was coming off a hot streak. I think eventually we'll see another hot streak, but guess what? It'll follow by another 2 for 38. That's just who Trevor Story is. And if you look at his hits, the one today was like an infield single that was like a high chopper over like the pitcher's mound or something. And then like another one that was like in the hole between short and third. Like, he's not hitting the ball hard in the last 45 at bats. It's just not looked good. So it's really hard and really frustrating that he can go from hitting the ball, driving it all over the place, driving it to the opposite field, to just becoming completely lost and, you know, swinging at sliders outside the box all over again. So it's just weird how he can just go hot, cold, hot, cold. But
yeah,
he's stayed healthy so far.
Yeah, he's definitely stayed healthy. You know what, though? But he shouldn't be batting fifth, and that's on Cora. So, yeah, what are you thinking, Jason?
I agree. He shouldn't be hitting fifth. And, yeah, that's on Cora. It's also on your front office, because if he's not hitting fifth, who is it?
That's also on Tristan Casas for not being very
good. Yeah, that's true. It's a lot of people to blame on this.
Yep, that's a great point, because Casas should be higher up in your lineup, and right now you can't trust him, so he had a bump him down to seventh, and, you know, that's it. So
I know this isn't going to happen, but I've been thinking about it lately. How would you feel about a Duran, Campbell, Devers, Bregman lineup and kind of stretching it out a little bit more and going left, right?
I don't hate that, because Campbell, at least he takes walks. Like, he doesn't have to hit a home run every time he goes up there. I feel like people misinterpret the kind of hitter Campbell is. He's patient. He'll work at bats, and yeah, like, he might go 3-2 and strike out, but he works the count. And if Duran can get on, Duran's starting to heat up now. Like, you put Campbell second, Devers third, Bregman fourth. Then he can play around with the number five position. Like,
he probably will. Yeah. And then you can move Story down a little bit.
Yeah. And it should be Willier at five. And then Story's hitting six at best. And at that point, that's not as detrimental to you if he's striking out half the time. So I like it. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I like it too. And it's funny you say that, Jason, about like with Campbell, like the amount of frustration and the tweets that I see about Christian Campbell, who's a rookie. And then there's same people who are like, but don't worry, Costas is going to come out of it. And it's like, what? You're frustrated with a rookie who's like a legit candidate for rookie of the year at this point. I get it, it's early. And then you're sitting there and like defending Tristan Casas until like you die on the hill. Like it's that's like the frustrating part for me, especially with this fan base right now. But anyway, Nick, to your point, I think right now anything would help. And I think that's a good plan. Will we do it? I have no idea. Well, probably not, to be honest.
I don't think Alex Cora would ever do it because I don't know if he trusts Christian Campbell fully yet. And that's a Cora thing, but
yeah. It would have to be like August and Campbell would have to have 20 homers. Like he would have to be a bona fide stud. He'd have to be turned into like a Jackson Merrill type of guy.
But to be honest, if we're doing that in August and we need that, like that's a bigger problem.
I think he's that good now. Like I think he can handle the two spot in the order. At least until Devers becomes a star again.
No, agreed. I was talking about meaning like to make these shifts in the lineup. Like if we're dying for it because we're still struggling and it's August and that's when he decides to, like, it's probably too late.
Yeah, I would agree. But if he's doing it by then yeah, it's probably out of desperation and, you know, teams out of the wild card racing, which that's kind of a disaster situation at this point for what you did in the offseason for the way this roster looks. So hopefully it doesn't come to that. But yeah, this is the thing. This is who Trevor Story is. Like, I just looked up his splits. He's hitting 400 against lefties, 225 against righties. This is who he is. He has 30 strikeouts to 4 walks against righties. So if you're a right-handed pitcher, as long as you don't throw a meatball in the middle of the zone, you can get him. Just throw the slider outside. He'll chase it every single time. Throw a heater 97 just a little bit up. He can't catch it. So
yeah. Exactly. The only pitch he can hit off a right-handed hitter or pitcher is a hanger. Anything over 94, untouchable. Anything outside the zone, untouchable. He's got no shot. Against a righty, he should be batting eighth.
Yeah. I honestly, he should be. Yeah. Against a righty, he should be further down the lineup. Against lefties, you can bump him up a little bit, but I don't want him hitting any further than fifth against a lefty. So yeah, he can run into one every now and then, but if you get a lefty that throws 98, it's the same problem.
Yeah.
He just can't catch up to the fastball. So, unfortunately, this is what you paid for. This was your big, you know, Chaim Bloom. Oh, Chaim finally paid for someone. Are you happy now? Yeah, not really. Like, I know, and I feel bad. Terry was a big Trevor Story guy. I'm not. And this is why. I feel like you take these guys out of Coors and this is what you get. He's a meatball hitter. Like, that's it. So, yeah, the average is going to drop. The strikeouts are going to go up. Yeah, he'll have that game where he goes 3-for-4 with a homer, and everyone blasts us on Twitter. Oh, how do you feel about Trevor Story now, bastards? Oh, good take there. Like, okay, fine. Yeah, have fun with that. By the way, like, unfortunately, Marcelo Meyer now has a stiff back. Again, for like the fifth time in 2 years. So, you know, for all the people saying, oh, well, as soon as Story gets hurt, Meyer's coming up. Not so much.
He's not to get here first.
Yeah, like it's, yeah, exactly. It's a race to who's going to be on the IL first, Meyer or Story. Like, you have a bunch of fragile shortstops there. So, at the end of the day, it was a bad series for Story. This is going to happen. He's super streaky. You just have to hope at this point that Marcelo Meyer can just, I don't know, go see a chiropractor and get your back fixed or something. Like, try to stay on the field for like 2 weeks straight. And the job is yours, dude. Because Trevor Story, I don't care about the money. I don't care about the contract. You figure that out later. Marcelo Meyer should be your future there. He is, and he should be your future there. Trevor Story is not. And I know what everyone was saying, like, first half of April, oh, if Story keeps going like this, the ideal situation is that he opts out and Meyer becomes your shortstop. That's not happening. I'm telling you right now, it's not happening, because Story's going to end the year hitting 220 with a massive amount of strikeouts, less than 100 games played, and no one is going to pay him more than the $23 million you're already paying him. He's going to opt back in. He's going to become your problem again. So you're going to have to make a decision. Like, that ideal world isn't happening, just so all of you know. Like, this is who Trevor Story is. You overpaid for him, as Chaim had a tendency to do. You know, there's a certain Japanese outfielder who's in WITSEC right now that we haven't heard from in years. That's what he has a tendency to do. So you're going to have to figure out a way to get rid of him, to get Marcelo Meyer at your shortstop position. This is who Trevor Story is. You just haven't been paying attention if you think otherwise. So, which, again, a lot of Red Sox fans don't, because he has a home run. They go, wee! You know, yeah, he's great. So,
well, Red Sox fans 2 weeks ago were like, oh, man, if he gets hot, we could sell high on him in June.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I saw that too. Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, no, if he gets hot, we can totally offload that entire contract. That's how that works. Yeah. Yeah. No. You're all fools. So, unfortunately, you just have to hope that Trevor Story does a little bit something to help you get into the playoffs, and then we'll see about the contract afterwards, but this is who he is. Get used to it. It kind of sucks. But with that, we'll move to a guy who I don't think is going to be number one on a bottom five or number one on the you-know-what list anytime going forward, but he is this week. So, Chris, number one, take us home. What do we got?
Slayton. So, 3 earned runs in this series, all in game, was it two? Game two, sorry. Giolito was pitching really well. Umpire did screw him, but that's besides the point. But it ruined that whole game. Like, that was a win. Like, we should have swept the series if we're all being honest with ourselves. But, and yes, I recognize, Whitlock gave up the three. Slayton gave up the winning run, even though it wasn't an earned run in game two. So I got that backwards. But I don't necessarily know how I feel about that, because I recognize, yes, he didn't get those guys on base, but like, he gets paid to pitch too, right? Like, I've seen plenty of guys get out of that situation when the Red Sox are batting with the bases loaded, right? So, yeah, I'm not going to necessarily blame him, but he happened to be the pitcher that we got walked off on. But tonight was just an absolute disaster. I mean, with Vladdy, like, I know he's not the only decision maker on this, but why we're not walking him. When that happened, I knew we were losing. I didn't realize it was going to be a home run. But I've seen this a couple of times this season from Slayton, where he's been shaky. And when he is shaky, like, you need to pull him. And unfortunately, we're not. We don't have many options at this point. I think in the war room, Nick, you had made a comment about, like, I don't remember if it was Slayton or if it was with Whitlock, like, swapping him and Chapman. So if you want to make a point on that, because, I mean, I don't have much more to say on Slayton. It's just, you know, it's disappointing because I wouldn't necessarily expect it from him. But when I reflect on the season, there's been moments like this. It's just when they happen, we don't pull them out. And when we don't, we pay for it pretty mightily. And we did this series. So,
I just thought Slayton's command was a little bit down today. He was trying to get the fastball up and he was yanking it. And then he kind of, I saw some people trying to say it was a good pitch to Vlad, but realistically a good pitch was ball four. That was the only good pitch to Vlad. So there's no such thing as a good pitch to Vlad in that situation. The other point I said was, I think, when in game two, when the Blue Jays walked it off with Alejandro Kirk, I would have gone with Slayton in the ninth when Chapman pitched and then saved Chapman for the runner on base. Chapman strikes out the most guys in the bullpen. So that's the only reason why it's He's got a better strand rate. You know, he's not going to give up the ground ball and the sack fly. He's going to strike out the guy. So that's the only reason I would switch him. It might not have made a difference. I don't even know what the order was at the time. It might have been lefties in the ninth and then righties in the 10th. I don't remember. I know Alejandro Kirk is right-handed. So I don't know what the matchups were, but that's just me thinking off, like, you know, what I might have done at that moment.
Yeah, I think either way, your point remains true. In that situation, like, to just get someone up there is not going to get make contact. So, yeah, it's a great point.
I'm not saying Slayton is a bad strikeout guy, but when you have a Aroldis Chapman in your back pocket, you might as well use him in that situation when you know you're going to extras or you're losing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think you guys both make good points. Like, my biggest issue with Slayton from the start has been, and I know he's pitched in a lot of major league innings, I still feel like he's a little bit raw. Like, I don't think the stuff is fully refined. And look, Chapman scares the crap out of me in high leverage situations because he can strike out the side or he can't hit the side of a battleship and he walks the park. Like, that's who he is. Slayton gives up a lot of contact, though. And that's a huge problem for a guy who wants to be a high leverage reliever, or, you know, forget wants to be, but who the team is kind of thrusting into that position. Like, he does give up a lot of contact. He can miss some bats at times, but when it comes to the higher caliber bats, guys like Vladdy, Santander, whatever, he doesn't miss those bats. And that's kind of what I worry about. So I still think Slayton is a good reliever. I think you have to remember, he was another Rule 5 guy, right? Slayton? Yeah. So
he was a Rule 5, and then they traded for him. Like, another team took on the Rule 5, and then they traded for him.
Okay. So they still went ahead and acquired him. Okay. So, but either way, like, this is a guy who's bounced around a little bit. He's not old. He's, what, 26, 27? So he's still kind of in his prime. But I still think the stuff isn't quite there. And I don't know if it's ever going to really fully get there to the point where you can say, yeah, I feel good about this guy as a closer. Like, a lot of people were saying that in the offseason, and I kind of was like, I don't know. Not that I feel great about Chapman, don't get me wrong. And even Whitlock, like, I want Whitlock as a closer, but he's got to prove he can do it consistently. And look, he had a bad series. He was on our bottom five. So, you know, there's a reason for that. I feel like this is part of why Alex Cora is having trouble. He's having trouble deciding who to trust in these late inning situations. And one night he'll go to Chapman. Chapman will strike out the side. And he'll go, okay, yeah, that's great. That's why you paid him. He's our closer. Next night, Chapman walks to, you know, struggles a little bit, labors, and Slayton comes in and cleans it up. And it's like a back and forth. It's just too much Jekyll and Hyde with that late inning bullpen stuff. So I like Slayton. I still like him. I'm not saying, like, get rid of him, but, you know, send him down. No, like, he's a valuable part of your bullpen, but I still feel like there's more there that's just not, he's not fully there. He still has more to unlock. He still has more to really refine. And will he get there? I hope so. This is why, and again, not to, you know, I keep teasing it, but this is why we're going to have a deeper conversation in a different show about Andrew Bailey. Like, is he getting the most out of not just your starters, but your relievers too? Especially a guy like Slayton, who is young and I think still kind of impressionable with what he's trying to do, what he's trying to hone in his craft. So can he get there? Can he get to a point where he hones his stuff enough that he does turn into closer material? Or is he always just going to be a Rule 5, 6th, 7th inning guy that Cora has to rely on too much? That's what concerns me. Do you guys have any thoughts?
Kind of last thing I want to bring up, and it kind of ties into Andrew Bailey too, because we're going to bring him up in the next show. I don't know how closely you watched that Vlad at bat, but Slayton started Vlad off with this nasty, like, cutter that started on the black and fell off outside, and it was nasty, and Vlad swung and threw it, and then he missed up and away, way outside with these fastballs. And then he threw a fastball right down the middle, 98, and Vlad swung right through it. And then he went to breaking balls. You just 94 off the plate with this little cut, and then 98 down the middle, and he swings through it. And then you go to You already got his bat. He's behind it. Like, why are you going to speed up his bat and go to her? It just makes no sense to go to a breaking ball in that spot. It makes no sense to pitch to Vlad at all, but why go to a breaking ball at that point?
Yeah, it's poor pitch choice and execution. I think
go back to that fastball, and if you miss outside, you walk him.
Well, I think, too, to your point, Jason, like, you know, in the offseason, we're talking a lot about, like, closure, just even high leverage situations for Slayton based on his performance last year. And I think the biggest difference between this season and last season is last season in the same situations, because he's still a contact, you know, pitcher, but that contact was turning into double plays that ended innings. It was turning into balls that carried out to the field, either to left field, center field, right field, and they're catching them, versus ones that are dunking in before them past the infield. And this season, they're dunking in, and those balls are either shooting down the gap and we're not turning double plays. And they're turning into costly, you know, runs or situations that are turning even more high leverage. So, yeah, it's frustrating because I agree. I think there's a lot there that's just untapped. And then to your point, Nick, I mean, how much of it is him being not coached properly, that like when he's doing things well, like you need to double down or you need to have a better pitch selection and know who you're facing in those situations, because that's what's going to take you to the next level.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do wonder, like, okay, do either of you guys think that Vlad was doing the – I always loved the story about Manny Ramirez, that he would intentionally swing and miss at a pitch that he loved just to fool the pitcher into giving him another one. So do you think he did that with the fastball down the middle? It's like, no, please throw me another, like, because I'll crush it next time. Like, do you think that Vladdy is at that level, or was it just Slayton misread it?
I don't know. He didn't hit a home run, a big breaking ball that was like 80 miles per hour. It was like down and in. I think the fastball was, he throws 98 and it plays up. It's not, he's got good life on his fastball. He doesn't have bad stuff. Just when you throw three out of the zone, you can sit in one spot and then it gets hit sometimes. So, but when you throw 98 to 100, like, you have some leeway that sometimes it doesn't get hit. So he just is gifted and he can throw that hard. So, but you can't miss your spot and then be forced to throw a curveball because you're not comfortable throwing a fastball in the zone. But realistically, you just walk him because you should have walked him in the first place.
Yeah, no doubt. He should have been walked. I mean, I would hope to think there's not two people as insane as Manny Ramirez on this planet behind the plate. But for the sake of this argument, I mean, I will also agree with you, though, Jason. I have seen many times where it's like, wow, like, he missed that, and like, that's not a pitch he misses, and then two pitches later he hits the same exact pitch and he like hits it a million miles away. So could he just be connecting and it's just the proper timing? I don't know. But I mean, he's talented enough where it wouldn't shock me that he does that on occasion, and maybe it's just against the Red Sox and we just happen to see it because he always kills the Red Sox. And him and that damn team the last couple seasons, like, regardless of their record, just are a thorn in our side. It's becoming so frustrating at this point.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we've got many, many, many more years of Vlad Jr. Potentially killing the Red Sox. So hopefully the pitching staff and Cora and all of them eventually catch up to him and figure it out. But for now, not a good series. Red Sox lose 2 out of 3. Hopefully they pick it up back up. But we will wrap this show on that. Like we've been teasing, we do have another deep dive episode coming your way this weekend. We're going to get into the Red Sox pitching staff, Crochet's usage, the bullpen, Cora's use of the bullpen, Andrew Bailey. Like, how do we feel about all of that? I feel like a lot of this season, especially the month of April, was focused on the offense, especially when it was struggling. I feel like now we need to shift our focus to the pitching staff, especially with the Walker Buehler injury or whatever that is, Giolito coming back, all of that. So we're going to do a whole deep dive on the pitching staff in an episode this weekend. So everyone enjoy that. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is
Dariano. We call him Day Day for short.
Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.